I would like to invite each of you to listen carefully to God's voice in your heart. Listen to His voice. Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid.
Hello and welcome. I'm Father Chad Arnold, and you are listening to About 4 O'Clock, a podcast on vocations and discernment. I am joined, as always, by Father Garrett Burns.
Hey, hey.
And Father Drew Hoffman.
What's up?
We are recording today at a makeshift studio at St. Francis of Assisi Parish, set up in the office of the pastor. But we've already named the studio once after St. Francis, so we can't do that again today. It's one and done.
Rules
and
rules. Yeah.
So today we are working out of the studio of St. Clair, patron saint of television.
I like television. Big television guy. That, yeah.
It's the predecessor to podcasts. I mean,
was there television during St. Clair's
Yeah, why
time?
Is that?
I had to ask someone because they made fun of me because I didn't know. Apparently when she lay dying, she wanted to go to Mass, but she couldn't get out of bed to do it. And so she had vision of the Mass taking place just kind of unfolded, I guess, before her bed. So it was like the original EWTN. And so she just laid in bed and watched Mass because she couldn't go to it.
First ever live stream. Did that count? Does it fulfill her obligation?
Well, not only are we in the office of the pastor today, we are actually joined by the pastor of St. Francis. Our guest today is Father Jared Lee. So welcome, Jared.
Good well, thank to have you so you. Much. Good to be here.
I would have liked to name the studio after the patron saint, but as near as I can tell, there is no Saint Jared. Am I wrong on that?
Saint Gerard of Magellan.
I almost went with that. I almost went with Gerard. I went with Claire, but I almost went with Gerard. That was my number two.
Actually, patron saint of pregnant women. My mom had serious complications with a brother before me.
Oh,
and
really?
So whenever I was conceived, she used Jared as an intercessory act to bring me to birth.
Oh, wow, that's awesome. Man.
That was cool. You should have chosen that one, Chad.
Come on.
Sorry, Gerard. But in my search for a patron saint of Jared, I never knew what Jared meant. I assume you know what Jared means?
I do. It's part of my vocation story.
Well, then we'll save that for later.
Wow.
I'm getting ahead of the card here.
My goodness.
Man. So I'm striking out here.
But the real question is, do you know my first name?
Oh, gosh, I did know that. I knew Jared was your middle name.
I think I know.
I knew it at one time.
Christopher?
Yeah.
There, okay. Yeah. Have you always gone by Jared, or was that a later?
Always, yeah. For whatever reason, mom, dad, five boys, the three middle ones go by their middle name. David and Ryan go by their first name.
Really?
Interesting.
Yeah.
We got a couple other priests of the diocese that only go by the middle name.
Who?
Buster.
Trevor, yeah.
Trevor.
Jimmy B, that's right.
And I think there's someone else. I feel like there's another one in that mix, but I know Trevor.
Glazier. What's?
Glazier, yeah. Yeah, his first name's Kirk, but he goes by Matt. Well, one of our regular topics here on the podcast is, and we've not done it in a while, but what are you reading? So, Jared, you want to kick us off? What have you been reading of late?
Well, I would like to say that I'm reading some deep theology. Or some intense reading from the church. I just got off my 90 days, so I did some 90-day sabbatical, and so I did some reading then. So I'm actually taking a little bit easy with reading the Silmarillion right now. So
nice. I don't know if that qualifies as easy reading by most people's court. I mean, the Silmarillion is not any. I've never read it.
Well, this is my third time through. So,
third time?
Oh, yeah. I would consider myself more a Silmarillion Tolkien than even a Lord of the Rings Tolkien.
Really?
Wow. Right. That's how my students are. I bought Silmarillion last week, and I had a copy that Nate, my brother, has because he's the worst. But I bought because they talk about Silmarillion and Men of Huron or whatever, and some of these other books way more than they talk about Lord of the Rings.
Really?
They talk about their spirituality and stuff like that. Yeah. All the time are in your boat.
Yeah. So have you read it?
Yeah, for maybe twice. We read it. We took
You've
a Tolkien class.
Yeah, I would never have read it if I hadn't been in a class,
right.
A Tolkien class at conception. So we walked through it together and that was great.
Yeah.
Well, that's wild because so for my fun reading right now, so I'd read Lord of the Rings in college. I'm like, it's been a long time. I'm rereading it. I've never read the Silmarillion because honestly, I don't think I'd like it. Tolkien, I didn't remember liking him that much in college. So I'm rereading Lord of the Rings. I am enjoying it much more than I remember. I'm on the third book right now, Return of the King. So maybe.
But it's a true statement to say you haven't read Lord of the Rings until you've read Silmarillion.
Really?
Huh? Because once you read Silmarillion, you will reread Lord of the Rings with so much more knowledge.
Really?
Oh, yeah. It's as trite as this may sound, the New Testament has understanding because you know the Old Testament. The Old Testament is understood because you know the New. And there's the backstory, passionate and dramatic and romantic and violent and the imagination, the mental imagery that you can get from it, and the way in which he made a parallel folklore, you know, so he set out for a Western folklore. That's what his job was in setting out the Silmarillion. His folklore parallels reality in such a way that you're actually able to see reality from a different vantage point because of the parallel. And the creation of Ea with Ainur and the Valar. And
that's what I preached about yesterday.
Oh my God.
Because so many of the students get like in our missionaries and stuff like that, get it.
And the story of Hurin and, Karkaroth, the werewolf. And I mean,
Dad, you got to get in on this.
It's not a werewolf. It's not a werewolf, but the wolf of Sauron. It's just the stories are incredible.
As an NBA fan, I'm going to call you all nerds, but
you know, it's like, okay, so in the Lord of the Rings, you always hear about the Eagles. But there's never in the Lord of the Rings any perspective on the Eagles. You just know there's these things that come
in.
Why
didn't they just take the Eagles to throw the ring away?
But within reading the first 20 pages of Silmarillion, you understand that the Eagles are actually like the most ancient of all of the Maiar and play this central role throughout all of the world. So it's just, it's those things that bring depth to the Lord of the Rings.
I will say, you're convincing me. Like, I've always put Silmarillion on the side. I'm like, I'm not really interested in that. And rereading Lord of the Rings has changed some of my opinion of Tolkien now that I'm older. I'm appreciating it more, but I still don't think I would have picked up Silmarillion, but I think, honestly, I think you are convinced me. Next time I'm at 8th day, I'll have to pick up a copy, and then I'll have to reread Lord of the Rings again, and
there's a year's worth of reading. I do have to bring this up because it's a thing that's happening in my life right now. I've been working hard at trying to find a better hobby. I've been wasting so much time watching TV or past episodes or whatever, and I've really gotten frustrated with that, so I've literally gotten the TV out of my house. Oh, nice. I found the Lord of the Rings version of Legos.
So nice.
I have bought every set of the Lord of the Rings Legos, and they have Orthanc, Sauron's tower. And it's 29 inches tall.
No way.
29 inches tall.
I know where we're going after we record.
I could relate to that because I don't know that I have any hobbies.
Yeah, yeah.
And right. So like I hang out and I read, and then not in like a, I guess, an unhealthy way, but I don't, like, sometimes as a priest, you don't have necessarily these other things that you do.
I have a hobby. Her name's Serafina, but that's another conversation.
We're going to have to get into that.
There's another priest of the Dice, Father Fogg. He focuses more on the Star Wars.
I've heard
he does
this.
The Lego sets.
I haven't talked to him yet.
You have to get that. I could see, I haven't done it, but there's a therapeutic quality almost just because you're following directions.
The only other action that I've ever done that gives me the same mental space was fly fishing.
Really?
Because fly fishing is such a mental, you count out, you count in, where are you at, your surroundings. There's so much mental energy to everything around you that you really can't focus on the stressors of your life.
Wow.
You can't obsess over things because you're focusing on that which is in front of you.
Yeah.
And Legos kind of does the same thing because I'm highly critical. This is a picture over here, and I know you guys can't see it, but they all can. The last picture that I drew is the face of Jesus.
You drew
here.
That.
I did. That
to was those who are listening, it is very good.
It's great.
It was my holy card for my ordination. It was on the 30-day silent retreat that I did in my diaconate year before I became ordained. But I'm so critical that I can't draw anymore because I get so upset with how bad it is or whatever else. Legos, you don't do that. It's like, you put it together.
There's only one way it can go.
Yeah. And if it's bad, you pull it back apart. Yeah. You know, so it's a non-critical space. And as childish as it kind of sounds, at the same time, it's a way for the brain just to be off.
That's cool. Makes a lot of sense to me, actually.
Human.
Yeah.
How about you two? What are you guys reading these days?
I'm reading The Victory Machine, which is I borrowed from Drew, and you'll know what that is, NBA fan.
Yes, well, I've read it multiple times, but remind me, you know.
And for the listeners.
For the listeners.
It's about the rise and the fall of the Warriors dynasty, so They were an awesome team, and then they got Kevin Durant, one of the best players, one of the best scorers in the league in the history of the league, maybe.
Kevin, what was his name?
KD.
My boy KD.
Yes. Go on.
So it just gets in, you know, has behind the scenes interviews and stuff that was going on in the practice and in the organization. So that's just interesting to me because that's part of what I like about sports is it's this ongoing just human drama of there's all these personalities, and especially now they're on social media and they're just, they're managing their brand and all that kind of stuff goes into every night when they just go and they tip the ball and they play against each other. But all this other stuff is going on, and that pulls back the veil a little bit on that stuff that book does. So I've been enjoying that.
And I've thought a lot about, since being a pastor and just being a priest in general, how similar it is to being a coach in that you're managing personalities and you're managing people, and you are hoping to get people to their highest level of achievement in a certain sense, but to be the best version of themselves, to get along with each other, to take care of yourself while you're doing all of those things. And so I think there's a lot of similarities, actually.
How about you, Drew? What you reading?
I'm reading, kind of for fun, it's a book called American Pilgrimage by Christopher Shannon, who was a kind of a disciple of my favorite historian, Warren Carroll. And he just does a big survey of American Catholic history.
Oh, wow.
From Columbus to kind of right now, post-Vatican II. Wow. So it just goes through, tells a bunch of stories. I don't know how he did his research, but a bunch of stories about like neighborhoods in New Orleans. I mean, he goes and neighborhoods in Philly and this kind of nuts and bolts Catholicism and Catholic life throughout the United States.
Did he say he's reading this for fun?
That's what I like.
I'm putting this in the theology section of like
the put me to bed at night.
We're like those, Silmarillion basketball. And he's like, oh, you know.
Those types of things I like when they're stories. When church history is
story or data style.
It's not data. And so it's very much storytelling of these individual characters who I'd never heard of before throughout the Catholic Church in the United States.
Well, for my spiritual read, I'm reading something similar, but I'm disappointed because it's more data-driven than story. But a history book. It's A History of the Church, Volume 2 by Philip Hughes. It's The Church the World Create, and It Created. So it starts at the Edict of Milan at 313 and runs to the death of Thomas Aquinas in 1274 and just how the church created that. And so it is boring in a lot of ways, but it's also interesting the same way. So it's a lot of data. I was just reading today about the death of Charlemagne this morning and the crumbling of the Holy Roman Empire and how the bishops and monasteries, how different parts of national things had to respond to that and the relationship to the Pope. And it's a great eye-opener every time if you're reading news and you're feeling like, wow, this is kind of depressing time in history. Then you read some of these other history and like, nope. We're doing all right, comparatively.
Yeah, the turn of the 2000s was nothing like the turn of the 1000s.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. 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 You're just talking about gouging people's eyes out. It's heavy at times. But I'm disappointed because I was hoping for more of a history that was a little more story-driven. This has some of that, but it's a little bit more data-y. And so it can be a little tedious at times. Well, very good. In the past, also in episodes, each of us have shared our vocation stories. So I thought for this episode, Jared, you're the first guest we've had who is a priest and not a bishop. Very narrow category there. So you are our first diocesan priest brother to be a guest on the episode, maybe a better way to say that. So I thought it'd be great if you're willing just maybe to share a little bit of your vocation story. I got a little ahead of the card apparently when I asked about the meaning of your name. So I'm going to back off now and just let you share a little bit of that with us if you would.
So my vocation story actually started in third grade. So, which is different than many others. I was one of those kids, you know, fireman, astronaut, plumber like my dad, or be a priest. It had always been in my sphere of awareness. Mm-hmm. From an early childhood, mom was a daily mass goer. So from the womb all the way through to today, I have been going to daily mass. So if I was to look statistically at every day of my life, more than probably 85% of the days at daily mass.
That's awesome.
My mom's faithfulness, the Catholic grade schools that I've been to, the high school that I went to, which we didn't have every day there, but I would come over here to St. Francis after school actually to go to mass. And then obviously seminary and things like that. So my world's always been a Catholic world. It's always been a place where I mean, the priest was in front of me every day. So it was a no-brainer. And I always admired Father Vincent Eck, who was my childhood pastor. You know, he was a farm boy, big man. He was a man's man, and he baptized me at Christ the King. And so whenever I was in third grade, I knew my mom would like what I was about ready to do. That's one of the motivators, I guess, for a kid. It's like, if mom likes it, then it's got to be good. Yep. And so I went up to my third grade teacher and I said, hey, rather than going to recess, can I go to the church to pray?
Wow. And so do you say no to that?
Well, she had a heart attack. No, but no. So she's just like, well, yeah, which is kind of funny. You know, in today's world, your kid would never walk across campus by themselves.
Sure.
You know,
that like, time is gone.
Sure. You're not important. You just go be by yourself over there.
That's what I would have thought, is that this kid wants to go mess around somewhere.
Right. So at any rate, I go to Christ the King. And for those who don't know Christ the King, it's a church in the round. Mm-hmm. It's about 200 degrees. Of pews, and then the organs in the back. And so I just remember the distinct memory of walking into the church and kneeling down in the back and being nervous. One, I'm by myself. Two, I didn't know Father Vince would be angry at me for being in the church by myself. So I was kind of looking over my shoulder, but I knew my mom would like it. And so then therefore Father Eck would like it too. So it's just, I was praying there, and inside myself was a sense of a phrase, a word, whatever you want to call it, that said, just get closer. And so I moved from the back pew to the front pew. And I was there still kind of looking over, not really knowing what to do. I can't say that I was in any kind of deep prayer state other than the fact that I was in the church. And again, it was like, get closer. And so I actually went and knelt down on the big step of the altar in the church there, mm-hmm. which was really nerve-wracking, because now it's a kid in the sanctuary, you know, kind of definitely where you're not supposed to be. And again, I heard, get closer. And so there's a small round step on the tabernacle in the sanctuary of Christ the King. And I went and I knelt down there. And then that's where I knew, basically, this is where I want you to mm-hmm. be here.
Wow.
Fun fact, in the renovation, the tabernacle now is dedicated by my mom and dad to David and I.
Well, that's wow. beautiful.
Oh, that's awesome. Cool.
So it's kind of a neat
that is really sort of cool.
Deal. Yeah. So from that point forward, the call has always been a part of my life. It always been a reality that I could do. So my sophomore year was the next time I encountered my vocation. Father Matt McGinnis was the vocation director at the time. I just knew it was a sophomore year. I enjoyed serving my whole time. Serving was just my world. I enjoyed that very much. Adoration was a part of my world. Daily rosary with the parents. Actually, we'd do a rosary in the morning, a rosary at night for a while as well.
Wow.
That was influenced by the Medjugorje spirituality coming around and things. So I went to basically mom and dad and said, I think I'm supposed to go to the seminary. And it was more imminent, kind of like high school seminary.
Mm-hmm.
And we called Father McGinnis and he's like, no, we don't do that. So you just kind of go back to high school, finish out your high school, lead a prayerful life. And we'll talk in again in a couple of years. And so I did that. And the next year I discovered this God-given thing called girls.
What?
Yeah, it's like, oh my gosh. It was actually quite a wonderful experience. I had a girlfriend for about a year and dated girls, loved going to the dances, loved going to on dates with friends and whatnot. And so that, coupled with the fact that my older brother, Father David, started to have a vocation call as well, started to make me question whether or not I was actually going to go to the seminary.
How many years are there between you and David?
4 years by age, 3 years by ordination.
Okay.
So at any rate, by the time my senior year came around, David was kind of kicked into that thought. And so I just thought, no, this isn't the right time for me. And so went to WSU, and there I discovered adoration more specifically, because you walked into that chapel at the time and the Eucharist was the center of the building, literally. And so I'd spent a lot of time in adoration there with really good Catholic friends. And that's where I finished my call to go to the seminary. One of the two calls, go to the seminary, and then after that, discern whether or not you go on. So whenever I got to the seminary, kind of tying this back to my name, just because that's part of the... the shtick right now, you know, I started taking Greek, Hebrew, and Latin. So I was the ordination class a couple years before the requirement to learn Spanish. It was not as a felt need at the time in our diocese. Yeah. 2 years later, it'd be required of everybody. But so I took Greek, Hebrew, and Latin. I loved the ancient languages. And whenever I took Hebrew, I learned that Jared is actually the derivative of the same derivative as Herod, which is kind of sad. Just throw that down, you know, but it actually means one who leads. Is that the same research you had?
I had that. I saw a thing that said two, that and rose.
Rose.
That it can also be a meaning flower. In Hebrew for rose, I guess.
Well, okay.
So I assumed the rose was part of your vocation because you were the rose of the family is what I was assuming what it was.
Or I'm just really thorny. So just don't touch. So at any rate, no. So one who leads, and then Christopher, Christ-like, is the Greek derivative of Christopher. And so whenever that happened, knowing that my vocation story had already been a kind of a nascent early youth story, I realized I kind of came out of the chute with a collar on my neck, you know, and it's just Christopher and Christ-like and one who leads. And so that had a real impact on me then too, just sort of discerning that, because my 5 years of undergraduate were 5 years because, and I don't mean to sound melodramatic when I say this, but those first 5 years were torturous for me. And I say that as an accurate descriptor of the interior experience that I had there. It was very, very difficult separating myself from the world of dating, which was a wonderful and beautiful thing. Questioning my own call, questioning my own worthiness. One of the most important moments in my seminary career is when another Father Samuel at conception. It was a Saturday morning. If anybody's been to conception, there's a big tree right in the middle of conception. Yeah. And I was walking by that tree, and this monk, I mean, he didn't miss a beat. He walked right up to me, put his finger in my face, and he goes, "You got a monkey on your back. You're not going to be happy until you get it off." Wow. And they kept on walking.
I'm like, that's Father Samuel?
That's Father Samuel.
That's cool.
Yeah, wow. But it identified, you know, whatever you want to call it, demon or whatever thing I was doing. And there's truth to that. There's a... Something was externally driving me that needed to be quelled. And that was a moment of clarity for me.
That's really cool.
However, I did end up discerning out of the seminary, leaving the seminary to go back. I left for a semester.
Really? I
didn't know that either.
Yeah. So that's why I'm 5 years undergrad. So I discerned out of the seminary, came back, worked for Intrust Bank. I actually went to one semester at Newman University. But the thing that happened that was not happening in the seminary is adoration. Came back to Wichita and we had adoration again. Wow. And as a matter of fact, the Adoration Chapel that's 300 yards away from us here on St. Francis, because I wasn't at WSU then, the seminaries at the time didn't really encourage the adoration exposition discipline. They weren't inimical to it. They just didn't encourage it. So whenever I came back, I was actually dating and going to adoration at the same time. And it became very clear to me in that moment that while I enjoyed dating, I was satisfied in front of the Eucharist. So my contentment was in front of the Eucharist.
That's a great distinction.
And
that is.
And it was an equal recognition of the beauty of both, but the rightness for one. Mm-hmm. And so that really led me. I wish that I could say I went back to seminary is all good, but I told you the first 5 years were actually torturous, which goes into the first year of my theology as well. And, you know, a couple of episodes, you guys had a conversation with Pat Burns. I was actually in the room when you were doing that. And it was good to have him talk to Garrett and about Devin's vocation, because I had a moment with my dad where I was at conception and I was losing it. I mean, I didn't know what to do. I was torn between marriage. I was torn between priesthood. I was torn in myself. The pressure was mounting. I was just laying it out, and we were actually on a couch. There was a lamp in between us. I just remember the context so vividly, because after I got done, I'm like, "Dad, I just don't know what to do." And my dad looks at me and he goes, "Son, I can't help you." He goes, "Look," he says, "it doesn't mean I don't care." He goes, right. "I can't take this away from you." He goes, "For me, my vocation happened. I came back from Vietnam. I saw this blonde. I dated her. I was driving down the road. I saw a sign for a plumber. I picked it up. I went in. A few years later, that plumber was needing to transition out. So I bought the business and I own a business." He says, "I don't know what you mean by discernment. For me, it just happened." And this torture that you got, I can't help you with that except for this. I love you and I appreciate you, but this is your own. And for that, that was the most freeing moment and also terrifying moment of complete isolation. But here's the deal. I can never blame anyone for my choice except the movement of the Holy Spirit inside me. Let's say it positively, right? Mm-hmm. So, and Dad, let that be mine at that moment. So I was able to do two trips. I went down to Brazil for a fun trip. I was down there for 15 days. And it was like... So this is like way of darkness, way of light kind of story here. I went down to Brazil and I was with the top 1% of the wealthy down in Brazil. I saw banana plantations. I was in an apartment that was on the ocean, that the outside of the apartment was marble. It was just, you know, of course they're marbles for our sandstone, you know, right, it's just, right. But nevertheless, it was just, it was the world of flesh and money was in front of us. Now, they weren't bad people that I was with. It wasn't a bad world, but nevertheless, it was like, here's the platter. You know, this is what you could have. And by the way, there's a woman walking down on that beach and you could like go talk to her and probably start having a relationship, right? Then that was during Christmas. Then that year, that summer, I went to Lithuania. I was the first group of seminarians from Conception to go to Lithuania. There were 9 of us.
I was part of the last group that did that.
Oh, yeah. Life-altering experience. Mm-hmm. And that was the experience of ministry. And there were some really beautiful, wonderful, wholesome Lithuanian women that I could have easily have entered into a relationship with, knowing that this is a woman who would have vocation and Catholicism. So here was this legit, like, before you is the vocation to marriage. Before you is ministerial experience and reality. And again, my satisfaction was ministry, not the romantic side of the relationship. Mm-hmm. And I wrote, you guys, for Wheel or for Woe, I wrote that 100 children reached into my heart with 1,000 fingers and overturned it as soil for seed, because they changed me. They changed the way in which I thought about what God was calling me to do. So that whenever I came back, my mind was set on ministry. But then I had to unravel all of my, what I would say, emotional world to be able to focus then. So then the last 3 years of seminary were very spiritually driven and charged and focused and lost the overtone of torture.
Thankfully.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
You were Gary and I's chaplain when we went to Bishop Carroll. So you spent obviously time in high school ministry. And then St. Francis has had a lot of vocations over the years, particularly during your time here. What are some of your, when you're working with men and when you're encouraging vocations and when you've seen, so you've had a lot of experience of young guys thinking through this, any tips, tricks, thoughts that come through a lot of experience in this area?
To recognize that you have something to offer that is not anybody else's to offer. Mm-hmm. I think that we in the Diocese of Wichita have so many priests who are easy to look up to. Father Bernie Gorgeous, Father Eckberg, Father Margaret Berry.
Father Blick.
Father Blick, sorry, is kind of psychologically blocking.
Never heard of him.
But you know, you can go through the list of all of our priests and really see somebody who looks up to. And so a young man who's able to look at a priest and say, that's a man who's doing the job that's set before him. And he's doing it faithfully, maybe not the best way that he can do it, but nevertheless, you can see a passion behind it, you can see a purpose, you can see a resolve, and you can see a drive. And that's what men want to see. They want to know that they can live life with a meaningful purpose. And whenever they see liturgy done well, whenever they see a man on his knees, whenever they see a priest who's mixing with the kids, who's, you know, on the sidelines of the game, you know, for you guys, I remember very vividly being with you in different elements of ministry or at your games or on March for Life or wherever it was.
What I would say is one of the things I remember most about you, Jared, is how involved you were in our lives as high schools. Like I do vividly remember you on the sidelines. I remember you on the buses with us. I remember you in class being as that was a very transformative experience for me. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that was the lived experience of relationship, that this is a man who's not alone, who's not isolated, who's not on some kind of white island, but who's relatable, who's here, who's able to be engaged, you know? And it's knowing that this normal human man can have an extraordinary purpose set out by the Lord. And then whatever my talents are, doesn't have to be his. Whatever mine are can also be an inspiration for someone else. And I think that that's the cycle of vocations that we have in the Diocese of Wichita.
Yeah, I love the way you put that. Just like them trying to encourage them so that they can see that the gifts that they have could also be lived out fully as a priest. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like, man, I love Father Jared and he was my chaplain. I love whatever my priest is at home. I need to be just like, no, like you just need to find who you are in those gifts and you can share those and live fully as a priest.
When you were in the seminary process, did you and David ever like talk about that or compare notes, or was it kind of a separate, he's doing his thing, I'm doing my thing?
You know, David and I are so different. And I don't know how y'all see us brothers, you know, Father David, Father Jared, you know, as priests outside ourselves. But, you know, growing up, our personality worlds are just two different personality worlds. And I'm very much the third child of the family. And actually, it's kind of schizophrenic. I was the youngest child for 10 years. And Ryan were born 10 and 12 and a half years later. So I became the middle child, but then 5 years later, David and Shane were gone, so I became the oldest child. You know, so it's kind of this funny family dynamic. But the best way to answer sort of David's track and my track as far as vocations are concerned, whenever I showed up at the Josephinum, first of all, Father Matt called me and said, "Look, we're going to send you to the Mount, but I think you should go to the Josephinum. But we don't think you should go to the Josephinum because your brother's there. can you and your brother get along? And I'm like, we're in two different worlds, Father. You know, it's not a get along. We can get along. It's just that our spheres of worlds were just different, you know? So I show up at the Josephinum. Father Lynn, an old Jesuit, comes up to me, meets mom and dad in the parking lot. And he says, oh, you're David's brother. You got big shoes to fill. And I go, I wear boots.
Nice line.
What's great about this is 4 years later, Father Lynn comes back to mom and dad and taps dad on the shoulder and goes, he's right. He wears boots.
That's a great line.
So yes, we influence one another. And since, you know, so far as we're family, we're able to talk about seminary, we have shared experiences and things like that. But as far as the call itself, David's was radically different than mine in the process of it.
Yeah. We hope to have him on the podcast in the future for him to come in. And yeah. So if you want to stick any jabs or dish any dirt, you know, you got the ball first.
I love my brother.
You hear that, David?
Not just because he's the Vicar General. Right.
No, that's why I ignore the Vicar General.
Also different worlds.
We do need to talk about the pet situation.
Yes.
I know the time is getting... So I just to my...
I'm glad you remembered because I almost forgot about that.
Just because
this is important.
To just share this is that we talked about pets the first time whenever we talked about pets and I was pretty vehement about it. Uh-huh. And it wasn't long after that you like point me down in the gathering space here at St. Francis. And I truly had not even thought that anybody listened to that. So I was like, I can just spout off takes and nobody's going to be... think about our brother priests actually listening to this. And I'll defend it. I will defend my thoughts on it. But it was a good reminder to me. It's like, I probably need to think about what I say on this podcast. Because these guys really love their pets and have experiences.
Yeah. So where do you fall on this? Should priests have... Father Jared, should priests have pets or not?
Well, I fall squarely on the side that we should. Now, should have. No, should have. Can.
Right. Oh, yes. There. Yeah, that's a good distinction.
So that is a distinction, you know. So the reason why I have a pet actually is kind of twofold. I watched Bazinga with David and watching David get out, walk, have some space, some intentionality. There was a amenability between him and Bazinga that really brought a type of peace and calmness to my brother, you know, and not to mention that you're responsible for something outside yourself. So you do have to go for a walk.
Yeah.
Going outside on days that I would not normally go outside. I wouldn't go outside on a cold day, but I would with my dog, you know, kind of deal. And then LeBenz, whenever he was here, Father LeBenz, he kept doing the younger brother, you know, we need a dog, we need a dog.
I hear that from the seminarians all the time.
Yeah. So actually, between those two things, I just literally on a Saturday morning, I thought I'm getting a dog. I mean, there was I used to have fish as well. I had two fish tanks. Mm-hmm. So this is not the first time round with the pets, but you don't walk your fish. So I actually went to dog store and I looked in and said, look, I want a small, smart, hypoallergenic, easily trainable dog. And she literally looking at me points to her right and says that dog. And it was Serafina. And I saw how much it was, and I said, how about a different dog? Literally, I did. So then we looked at another dog that just went and worked it or anything else. Well, for me, the dog breaks me out of my bubble. I have to now think about something other than myself. She is a joy to me. I mean, she's fun. She's playful. She gets along with people. The kids here adore her. Mm-hmm. She easily mixes with other people. Yeah. She is the quickest conversation starter ever. Mm-hmm. Anytime I walk anywhere, Catholic, non-Catholic, is that your dog? And you're off to the races with a conversation. You know, for me, I'm a tactile person. To have a pet to pet is a difference for me. And honestly, I mean, in the end, there's not a day goes by whenever she doesn't do something that's just kind of fun.
Yeah. You know,
she loves chasing her ball. She brings it back to me. She'll go get her toys. She'll play with her toys. And she's just really good. And, you know, she's not the kind of dog that gets up in your stuff.
And to her credit and to yours, she's a well-trained dog.
Yeah,
so Serafina, she's very responsive as dogs go. I see you snap at her and she'll come back to you. And you know, she is attentive to you. I think that was actually our end point. The first time we discussed, like, if it's a well-trained dog, makes a huge, huge difference. Yeah. But yeah, Serafina.
So talk to my brother because Stella still has a lot of puppy in her. Right? She doesn't realize she's
and Stella's
huge.
A lot bigger.
I did actually buy Serafina because she was a mild dog.
Yeah,
compared to the others that were all up in your stuff. She was basically. I know you're there. and keep your distance, you know, so she, but at any rate. So I think that I respect what you're saying as far as the possibility of a distraction or other things like that. You made some mentions about the difference between pet ownership and hobby, but I would say that a pet ownership is an actual hobby.
Yeah,
I agree. You know, because I actually clean her myself. Yeah. I groom her myself. I trim her myself. And so the time that you would put into Lord of the Rings Legos, you also you know, can put into a pet.
This is something I have been thinking about with a pet. I'm not getting a pet.
Well, you can't now. You've already been
buying. I already staked my claim in this. But Seth, like I've said, I think before about the time and things like that and the attention. But what you're saying about caring for something outside of yourself, like it slows you down and it wastes time in a certain sense, in the best sense. Like, no, I can't jam pack my schedule today because I do have to be thinking about that dog. Maybe that protects me a little bit. Maybe that gets me out of my stuff a little bit.
Well, for me, and you guys have been around me enough to know that I blow and go. I'm a fast mover. I react quick. I'm passionate. I move fast. Having Serafina, literally, like before Serafina, and even now I have to slow down to start talk to person. It's easy for me to walk by a person in the foyer, which is really hard on people to not be noticed whenever a priest walks by. Well, Serafina both slows me down and gives that open conversation she's kind of running around today, or what's she doing? I'm actually engaging more with people because she takes me three times longer to get from the house to the office, you know? So good stuff.
Well, I think we have to wrap up there for today. So thanks for listening to About 4 O'Clock. Thanks for being here with us, Jared. If you have questions you'd like us to address, you can email us at wichitavocations@gmail.com. You can also visit us at our website, about4.org.
You know, you mentioned before about the last word.
Uh-huh.
And I told you that I wasn't going to do it.
Right.
Because it's not a saint one. But I will say this.
That's fine. Yeah.
If I can say, learn from my mistakes kind of deal. I'm 21 years old, a priest, be 22 here come June. I'm talking about moving fast, I'm talking about sort of things like that. The thing that I've always been told, and we all have been told this, you know, the three rules for being a priest, right? Do you remember this? Be kind, be kind, be kind. You know, the more that I have recognized the people that I have off-put or offended or rubbed wrong was because I forgot the simple rule of kindness. To take a moment to recognize the person before you recognize the thought or the action, to put the person before the schedule rather than the schedule before the person. If I was to have a last word to any seminarians who are listening, I would say take that to heart. If we can't be kind people, then we're nothing.
That's great. Thank you. See you next week.